My name is Nicholas Capozzi, and I'd like to reserve approximately 2 minutes rebuttal.
May it please the court. I would like to move
quickly through the timeline of this case, because I think it's important to understand the main issue. Then I'd like to discuss the three main topics I believe revolve around that issue. As the court is well aware, my client, Dr. Adam Sortini, had a guilty verdict rendered against him in November 4, 2008.
So he posted a bond allowing him to be at liberty, but ensuring his presence at sentencing.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And part of it was a $38,000 cash bond.
That is correct, Your Honor.
That's what we're arguing about today.
Yes, it is.
That cash bond.
Right.
And he indeed showed up, surrendered himself at sentencing, and otherwise complied with the orders of the court.
Right. He completely complied with all the
orders. And it's your position that $38,000 needs to come back at his direction, I guess, to counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because he's assigned it or something like that.
Right. A couple months after he posted the 38, he and his wife posted the cash bond. He assigned the proceeds to his counsel to secure representation throughout the appeal.
When did he move for release of the cash bond?
Well, he surrendered in the beginning of June of 2011, and he moved on the 29th of June to exonerate the bond and have the cash funds returned.
Had the district court acted on that motion?
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
When?
I believe it was September of 2011. We had a hearing, and the court ordered the return of the IRA to Dr. Sortini's wife, which was also part of the bond or the bond package that was posted.
But we're just hearing the cash bond.
Right.
Did the court order the return of the exoneration of the cash bond?
It did not, Your Honor. It followed the argument of the government. They had filed their argument a day before we filed our motion to exonerate the bond. They filed a motion pursuant to 28 U.S.C. Section 2044, and that statute essentially says, upon motion by the government, cash monies that are posted as bail for a bail bond can then be applied to a current restitution order. And that raises an important issue.
Well, doesn't this all hinge on the fact that the monies were not released? The court had, they were still in the account. So
yes.
It seems very important.
It is, Your Honor. It is very important. As I mentioned earlier, he was ordered to surrender in the beginning of the month, and essentially the funds just sat in the court's registry for several weeks. Mm-hmm. It is our position that, pursuant to an assignment that was executed 2 years prior, that the government still to this day hasn't contested the that it was entered in fraudulently or under any bad circumstances.
The attorney holding this assignment had walked into the clerk's office before the motion to exonerate had been acted upon or even filed and said, here's my assignment, I'd like to have the money. Would the clerk be obligated to pay the money?
It is our position, yes, Your Honor, he would. Because
without an order from the court, without a motion to exonerate.
Well, it is our position that at that time they were technically...
Can you start with a yes or no?
I'm sorry?
Can you start with a yes or no to my question?
Yes, they are entitled to the funds, but no, they would have to go through a different procedure. And that procedure would...
The clerk would say, I'm sorry, you may have a perfectly legal right to these funds, but absent an order from his or her honor exonerating the bond and directing me to turn it back over, I can't do anything. And the clerk would be correct, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And
do you contend that the government's motion was untimely?
I do. I do strongly contend that.
Explain to us how.
Well, it is our position that after the surrender, at that point, the funds should have gone back to the defendant pursuant to Rule 46 of the Criminal Rules of the Rules of Criminal Procedure.
Even in the absence of a motion to exonerate?
No. The rule says he's entitled to it, that if a motion is made, basically, it must go back to him unless the government executes a 2044 motion, which it didn't do for several weeks in this case. And again, it's our position that when he surrendered...
But it did it before your motion, didn't it?
Yes. Unfortunately, we filed it a day before. We had discussed the matter prior to the motion's filing, and it did fall in that row, Your Honor. You're right. But the real issue in this case is how Section 2044 operates against Rule 46 of the Criminal Rules of Procedure. Rule 46 states that bonds, the cash monies must be returned once all conditions have been satisfied. That much is clear. Section 2044 says, wait, upon motion by the government, the bond monies can then be applied to restitution. Now, if I read the government's argument briefs correctly, they state that 2044 actually becomes operative when the bail is entered or executed in the first place. That, in essence, it's a condition of a normal condition of a release when you get a bail bond.
We found an unpublished case which says that in a little different timing situation, where there was a motion to exonerate granted, and the government filed the similar motion.
Yes.
And the only reason the funds had not come forward because of a delay in the clerk's office. In that instance, in the unpublished case, the court said that the motion was untimely. Right. Doesn't that suggest that the motion in this case was, in fact, timely?
No, I do not believe it does, Your Honor, because it is our position that the motion itself does not necessarily have to come post-surrender date. There's many other opportunities where the issue can be discussed. Following the government's argument, there's no reason why it could not have been in the papers for conditions of release. It cannot have been brought up at sentencing when restitution was ordered, or any the long, long time frame we had before the date of surrender. The government could have, and complied with 2044, while at the same time respecting Rule 46, could have filed a motion asking the court that upon surrender that the funds immediately then get executed.
But there's no time limit, I mean, in the statute, or is there, for the government to pursue that motion?
No, there isn't, and that's part of the problem. That's part of the reason why we have an issue today.
If you could stay right in front of that microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Your argument is being recorded for posterity. We want to make sure we get every bit of it.
Okay. No, to answer Your Honor's question, there is no time limit in the statute, and that's why I think we must consider the policy reasons that are implicated here.
You have a case that discusses, this is interesting, the interplay between Rule 46 and 2099?
2044, Your
2044,
Honor.
2044, excuse me.
To be perfectly frank, there is very, very little authority out there that would directly go to the heart of this issue. Now, the cases that are out there, the court, I believe, was referencing the Bailey case from this circuit, do say it, basically those cases evolve around third parties posting the bail bonds and whether they are entitled when the government files this 2044 motion. And it's pretty clear the case authority says yes,
Bailey,
they are entitled.
Bailey doesn't really help you, because at least I don't think it does, because in Bailey they saw that there was a third party assignment and the government was seeking restitution based on what had happened there, and the judge said, okay, here's the pot of money, this is going to restitution, and yes, okay, I guess you get the rest, third party assignment.
I do think
how does that help you?
Well, I think the policy reasons behind Bailey evidences the policy of this circuit and the other circuits around the country, in that the government isn't entitled to everything they say they're entitled to. You have to.
Well, that's exactly the point. Doesn't the trial judge get to decide?
Well, the trial judge, and I see that I'm running out of time. I might not have any time left for rebuttal, but that's fine. The trial judge does decide it, but must decide it according to the rules and the statutes. By the rules and statutes, and it is our position that the district court made an incorrect analysis of the law, in particular stating that the government was first in time in this case because, and I'm paraphrasing the district court, defendant was on notice at the time of posting the cash bond of the section 2044, and therefore, no matter what happens, whenever the government makes the motion, it was going to go to the government. And it is our position that clearly violates the policy behind bail and people wanting to post bail to litigate their cases. And we have to ask ourselves, what would happen if this was read that strictly? Well, I'm not saying our client, but people would be more inclined for flight risk if they know that when they post bail, I'm never going to get this money back. And it could be much larger sums than this amount. That certainly would, I'm not saying it would necessarily, but it would factor into the flight risk analysis. I see that I'm approaching my time. And
I'll go ahead and give you 2 minutes for rebuttal, but thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stan Boone on behalf of the United States of America. The district court did not err in this case when it ordered that the monies be given to the government for purposes of paying the restitution obligation pursuant to a federal statute. May it please the court. This statute in question here, 28 U.S.C. 2044, is clear and unambiguous in its application. Upon motion of the government, in a situation in which the bond monies are of the defendants, those monies shall be applied towards the restitution obligation of the defendant here.
Well, which is superior, the 2044 or the 46 rule of 46G?
Your Honor, with regard to that, while that issue was raised in the rebuttal argument, the interplay between 46 and 2044, the government did not have an opportunity. They are not inconsistent.
Here you are, right here.
I am here, Your Honor. I'm ready to roll. They are not inconsistent with each other. Rule 46 is the procedural mechanism by which the sureties and bonds effectuate the Bail Reform Act. In other words, it's the procedural context in which we handle issues dealing with bond.
Does the district court have discretion in situations like this?
In which context, Your Honor?
Because this very context. Could the district, hypothetically,
yes.
Could the district court have said, I understand the government's motion, it's not untimely, but I think Rule 46 creates a superior interest in the defendant, and I'm going to order the clerk to send the money to the defendant.
In that situation, Your Honor, the district court would have erred, because Rule 46 is about exoneration, and the defense wants to confuse exoneration with the ultimate obligation to pay a obligation of the defendant. Distilled down to its essence, Your Honor, 2044.
So in this factual circumstance, where the government filed first and the defendant then moved to exonerate and the funds were still on the deposit with the clerk of court, the district court had no discretion under 28 U.S.C. 2044.
That's correct, Your Honor. However,
anything other than what it did.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I would even argue that had the defendant filed the exoneration motion first and the government subsequent, which did not occur in this case, the answer would be the same to that, because exoneration is different than the distribution of the funds. The bond is held there for purposes of the defendant's appearance. I think that the argument is that the government.
You think Bailey was wrong?
I'm sorry, what?
You think Bailey was wrong?
Bailey was decided pre-2044, so the district court with the Court of Appeals did not have 2044. Bailey was 1988, 2 years prior to the enactment of this particular statute.
You call that a time-honored case.
It is a time-honored, just like Marbury versus Madison, Your Honor. It's still good law, but in this case, Bailey does not have the advantage of looking at 2044. What 2044 did was codify aspects in which district courts had exercised discretion. Clearly, in a pre-2044 circumstance, the district court would have that discretion, because what it is doing is that money is being held in custodia legis, in other words, meaning that the government couldn't attach, the government could not file and get its money premature until that purpose of that bond had been served. In other words, it would be premature for the government to move prior to the obligations of the defendant for us to ask for that money back, because that money is being held for purposes of assuring the defendant's custody. So upon his physical self-surrender on June 2nd of 2011, that's when the government moved to apply the funds associated with the restitution. Distilled down, Your Honor, to its essence, this statute is saying that the victims shall be paid first before the bills of the defendant. And that's what it's doing. That's where the superior right comes into play. It's a clear and unambiguous statute. It affords for a couple of exceptions. One, third-party exceptions. That's not the issue here. There was third-party funds in here. They went back to the third party. There was a second issue with regard to the defendant and his wife's IRA, the community property aspect.
That's not before us.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is there were applications, careful applications by the district court in applying the statute. Here, the provision, the statutory, is a shall. It evidences Congress' intent. And, Your Honor, I would refer the court to a Supreme Court case, United States versus Estate of Romani.
Is this in your brief?
No, but this was dealing with the rebuttal aspect with regard to the interplay between Rule 46 and 2044. And it says, a specific policy embodied in a later federal statute should control our consideration of earlier federal statutes, even though it has not expressly been amended. And my point with that situation, and that is found at 523 U.S. 517, the Supreme Court, at 530-531. My point with that is that Rule 46 coupled with 2044 complement each other and give us the procedural mechanism by which funds held in trust for purposes of the detention, then upon the distribution by the clerk of the court, upon order of the district court, shall go to pay the victims first. And that's the government's position. The other cases cited by the defense deal with cases associated with third-party funds. Again, not present here. Rothstein, again, a pre-2044 case, but even the facts of that case note that when there's this interplay between creditor upon creditor in Rothstein, it is noted that the victims were paid first and that restitution had been paid in full. So the district court was not considering that issue. So unless the court has any other questions of the government, I'll submit it, Honor.
Would you send an electronic, just send an email to clerk copy to your opponent, just citing the case that
just that
asked.
Case that the
no argument, just the citation.
Just citation. Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor, I will do that.
Thank you
very much.
Mm-hmm. May please the court. Mm-hmm. I think it's important here to realize that this isn't just a normal 2044.
Right in front of the microphone, counsel.
Normal 2044 and Rule 46 analysis. We have a valid assignment that was executed here years before the government made its motion. And it is our position that assignment, which was never challenged as being invalid beyond the statutes we're talking about, became operative the moment after Dr. Sortini surrendered himself. There's an important policy at play with that, and that's the freedom of contract of parties, and it's in the record, and the court considered this, that it was the intention of the parties and the understanding of the parties that if the money were to kind of come back to the defendant, it would then be returned to the defendant and paid for and given to his attorney to pay for his legal fees. The other important point is Bailey. It was decided before 2044, but the policies here have been in play for a long time. And that's not to frustrate the purpose of bail, not to somehow undermine parties' abilities to enter into contracts freely. So I think Bailey is illustrative here of the policies behind these rules. The government mentioned victims must be, there's a policy of victims being paid before defendants' bills being paid. That's not what happened here. Again, it is our position that it was a valid assignment the moment after he surrendered himself. So it wasn't defendant getting the money back and, you know, paying his bills, people he owed. No. Via the assignment principles, it then transferred to his counsel. And with that, I'll submit if you don't have any questions.
Thank you very much. Can I just inquire, is that your co-counsel sitting?
Yes, it is, Your Honor, and my father.
Both. thank you. I just needed to inquire, has anybody ever told you look a lot like Roy Williams? You look a lot like Roy Williams. Roy Williams? It's remarkable. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Kent. Interesting. Thank you all very much for your presentation. The case is submitted.